I'm Mark Bayshore. At the top of our program, a trio of MSU researchers gathered yesterday in Lansing to discuss aspects of the Flint water crisis. In its monthly public policy forum, the university's Institute for Public Policy and Social Research gave guest speakers a chance to discuss the responsibilities of state and local governments in addressing the water emergency, as well as the work being done regarding the health of Flint residents. Current State spoke with two of the guest speakers. First, Dr. Mona Hanna Atisha, who's become renowned as a whistleblower in the Flint crisis. She also heads the recently launched Pediatric Public Health Initiative involving MSU and Flint's Hurley Hospital. I first asked Dr. Hanna Atisha where the health initiative is right now.
It is running full speed ahead, actively building a plane while we're flying it. So we have lots of research initiatives that already are underway to continue the assessment of the exposure. We're already doing a lot of community-based work in regards to the interventions. And we're already starting to identify kind of our cohort of kids and doing the baseline developmental assessment. So we are full speed ahead with many interdisciplinary folks working on this initiative and what's best for our kids.
Remind us of its long-term goals here, its broader goals.
Yeah, so the goal of the Michigan State University Hurley Children's Health Hospital Pediatric Public Health Initiative is really to flip the story. It is a reinvestment in our children because of this lead issue so that they do have brighter tomorrows, and it's a collaboration with community. It's a collaboration with tons of experts from different disciplines, both at Hurley and at MSU, and it's a collaboration with government. So we are all hoping to work together to build a model public health program, to build a center of excellence so that our kids do not see the consequences of lead poisoning.
You stressed three particular features of the program: assessments, monitoring, and intervention, and you really stressed the intervention. Are you conducting interventions now?
Absolutely. So every week at the farmers market, we do cooking classes that are lead-focused for the community. This is an intervention to teach people about the importance of nutrition and the importance of a lead-mitigated diet. Just yesterday, we had 12,000 gallons of milk donated by the Michigan dairy farmers as an intervention, because kids need calcium. They don't just need water. So we are doing lots of different interventions right now, and we have many in the planning stages on how to buffer the children from the impacts.
Talk to us some more about wanting to flip the story. What exactly do you mean there?
So our families, all they're hearing are sound bites. They're hearing brain damage. They're hearing irreversible neurotoxin. And they're feeling that their children are hopeless, that everybody's given up on them, and that they're a throwaway children, and this is a throwaway city. And this is what we're flipping. We are providing hope. We are providing the resources through many partners to change that sound bite so that these children are smart, they are beautiful, they're resilient, and they are going to have bright futures, and it's not a population that we've given up on.
I'm talking with Dr. Mona Hanna Atisha of the MSU Hurley Hospital Initiative here. You picked up some high-profile support recently. Actor Mark Ruffalo, Sandra Bernhardt. Can you tell us about their contributions?
Absolutely. So Mark Ruffalo actually came and spent the whole day in Flint. He came to the hospital. He's actually a water activist. He listened. The most important thing he did, listened. He listened to what was going on, and he used his profile to share the story nationally, because everybody needs to hear the Flint story. Everybody in the country needs to know what happened to Flint and what we need to do to move forward, because it's, you know, like I said earlier, it's not a political issue. It's become a political issue, but it's not a political issue. It's not a partisan issue. This is a humanitarian issue, and everybody needs to hear the Flint story. So if these famous folks can help share that story, we are grateful to them.
How closely are you following the activity in Washington, the testimony of the various officials before the House Oversight Committee?
Right.
Do you have time to follow that?
I listened to it on live stream in the car yesterday, so I was able to hear some snippets.
Any response to what you heard?
I think it's great that the House Oversight Committee has taken this up. I think the investigations are important. The city of Flint needs accountability to move forward. It's almost like a truth and reconciliation process. They need to know the truth. They need to know what happened so that they can begin to heal. And if these investigations are going to get at that truth, then so be it. And, you know, I support them. But hopefully it just doesn't become a blame game. Oh, he did it. This fault. We need to know what happened so that we can prevent another Flint.
I'm at the head of a long line here, so I'll wrap up. You're a relatively young pediatrician, it seems to me, who's playing a key role in Flint. Do you expect to spend the rest of your career in Flint? Do you expect to spend the rest of your career dealing with what you're dealing with now?
This is definitely my job now, and this is my mission, and this is why I wake up in the morning, is to do this work. And it's my commitment and to ensure that these kids have a brighter future, and so be it for now and for decades to come.
Dr. Mona Hannah Atisha is Director of Pediatric Residency at Hurley Children's Hospital in Flint and Assistant Professor of Pediatrics at MSU's College of Human Medicine. Many thanks.
Thank you.
Also yesterday, I sat down with Michigan State political science professor Joshua Sapochny. He shared the results of a study that looked at another aspect of Flint, the intricacies of state government's roles in financial emergencies. It involves the historic challenges Flint was already facing and its emergency management status. Sapochny claims misguided policy leads to problems, in particular for Michigan cities.
The mix of policies puts expenditure side pressures on local governments. So, for instance, a mandate, whether it's funded or potentially underfunded, right? This is something that the state requires local governments to do. Sometimes they're given the requisite resources to accomplish that from the state government. Sometimes they're not. Those types of pressures on local governments to take on certain issues and spend money in a certain way, right? That balanced against revenue side limitations. So, how vibrant is the aid environment that states would provide to local governments via revenue sharing or via other programs? And also the types of revenue and the amount of revenue that state governments sort of essentially allow local governments to take on. So the mix of those different policies and different sort of institutional structures has varying degrees of financial pressure on local governments. When you sort of quantify this and you put it all together and you rank order the 50 states, it turns out that it really is very challenging to be a city in the state of Michigan, particularly with respect to your ability to manage your fiscal affairs.
And on the back end, you took a look at. For example, you took a look at Michigan's emergency manager law, and you compare that with the laws that exist in other states for dealing with municipalities that are under some kind of financial distress. What did you find out from your exploration of these emergency manager type laws?
The main question there was, can we sort of capture the approach or the logic of a state, of the way that the states kind of define the nature of the problem, the problem being local financial distress or even an emergency, and try to get a sense systematically of how that logic, right, how that's manifested in the state's approach, in the state's policy. And so it turns out that there's about around 20 states that have an emergency manager type or a takeover type policy on the books. Around half of them actually seem to use the authority that's granted to the state to actually exercise that authority and use it to intervene in local governments. And it turns out that Michigan's policy is representative of one sort of type or one bucket of policies that focuses mostly on takeover. So you appoint one individual, that individual is granted a whole, for lack of a better word, dictatorial powers to run the city in the way that the manager sees fit. So there's that kind of approach, Michigan's approach, and Michigan's sort of the prototype for this approach. And you can contrast that with other states like maybe Pennsylvania or New Jersey that have more of a kind of a bottom-up approach. What distinguishes these two types of approaches is really how much the policy incorporates the preferences, formally incorporates the preferences of local officials when key decisions are being made. In Pennsylvania, New Jersey, right, more of a kind of a board structure where there's multiple actors, and some of those actors are local officials, right? The local officials are still empowered to make decisions. They're working with state appointees to try to work their way through these fiscal challenges. Contrast that with Michigan's approach, where it's one individual, that individual sort of takes over the city, runs the city with very limited staff and with very limited support. So you can sort of see how the logic kind of manifests itself there. In the case of Michigan, it's the locals screwed up, we're going to send one person in to clean house and get the city right again. In Pennsylvania, these are really challenging problems. One type of issue the local governments face is issues of corruption, issues of mismanagement, issues of dysfunction, political dysfunction at the local level. But they face a whole range of issues. There's a whole bunch of reasons why local governments are facing these sort of intractable financial challenges. Mismanagement is just one of them. And so, you know, our approach is more to sort of work with local governments in a more of a partnership approach to try to help them dig their way out of this hole.
There are no doubt some listeners hearing this who think Michigan's emergency manager law, in order to dig a municipality out of a deep hole, you've got to have some concentrated authority. That's what's required in order to dig a municipality out of a hole like that. How do you respond to that? And does Pennsylvania's approach, does a more moderate approach, does it tend to work?
So that's an excellent question, and it's something that we're actually currently working through right now. We're writing about right now. I think an example is worthwhile here. So Allen Park in Michigan. Allen Park, for folks who haven't followed this as closely, sunk a lot of resources into a film studio deal, and that essentially sunk them. They went into financial emergency. They went into Michigan's takeover protocol, and one individual was appointed. And in a year to 18 months, they were basically back in the black. They had their budget was balanced. They worked their way through the issue. In that context, a takeover is completely appropriate. It makes a ton of sense. The problem in Michigan is that there are a heck of a lot more Flints and Benton Harbors and Detroits and Highland Parks than there are Allen Parks. So the reasons why these local governments are in a financial emergency, one of those reasons is mismanagement and dysfunction. But that's one of a whole variety of issues, right? What we're calling for here is flexibility in the way that the state thinks about these problems. Sure, having, as you said, some centralized authority, that makes a lot of sense. It makes sense in certain contexts. You know, what we're saying here is that it's one size fits all, you know, it never works out. What's the problem with working a little more closely with local lawmakers to try to sort of help them manage their way through these crises as opposed to displacing them and essentially running the city for 18 months?
We want to thank Joshua Sapochny, MSU Assistant Professor of Political Science. He has been talking with us about the results from his Mott Foundation-funded study on the role of state government, specifically in Flint management, but it shed a lot of light on state and local management dynamics here. Thank you, Joshua.
Thank you, Mark.